You are Locked On Pirates, your daily Pittsburgh Pirates podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Today's crossover episode with Chris Castellani of Locked On Tigers is brought to you by BuiltBar.com. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKED15 and you'll get 15% off of your next order. That means you can be an existing customer of Built Bar and still get a good 15% off deal when you check out the best protein bar on the market, BuiltBar.com. April 19th through the 26th, listen to the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 presented by Locked On and Odyssey, featuring analysis from NFL experts Michael Irvin, Jason LaConforna, and Brian Baldinger. Our local experts for every team making trades and picking the next stars of their team. Search the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 on the new Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Odyssey is your audio home for all sports, podcasts, music, and news that matters to you. That's AUDACY. Make sure you check out the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 and enjoy today's episode.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into Locked On Tigers. I'm your host, Chris Castellani. It is Tuesday, April 20th, 2021. Thank you for tuning in today. And obviously, the Tigers were off yesterday. They play tonight, starting a three-game set back at Comerica Park against the Pittsburgh Pirates. And because of the off day, I figured I'd bring on a guest today. And I'm very excited to be joined by Ethan Smith, the host of Locked On Pirates, looking to discuss these two teams in this upcoming series. Ethan, how you doing?
Doing all right, man. Another off day for the Pirates. I think it's like our third or fourth off day already. So I'm just like, well, yesterday was, but either way, I'm excited. I always like the AL versus NL matchups, and that's what the Pirates are in the midst of right now. We play you guys and then Minnesota, and then I think Kansas City.
Yeah, so, who's all of a sudden hot? Royals are in first place right now. So yeah, that's going through that AL Central stretch. And I wanted to jump into this, and that was why I was happy to have you on, because I do think there's parallels between these two franchises right now. The Tigers are in year four and a half, five of their rebuild. And the Pirates, I think, completely officially kind of became set on the rebuild probably around 2019. And I'm just wondering, because here in Detroit, people are frustrated. People are tired of having to go through this every year, especially considering, you know, it's a big market and Chris Ilitch has a lot of money and it feel like they're not spending it wisely or not spending it at all at this point. What's just kind of your general mood of the rebuild right now? Are you willing to be more patient, or do you feel like the fan base is just tense at this point and just excited to see him show something as far as the major league product goes?
So where a lot of people are right now is, you brought up 2019, and that was the year Bob Nutting finally just got tired of Neil Huntington and Clint Hurdle and all those guys. And he basically said, okay, I'm bringing in a whole new group of people. He brought in Derek Shelton. He brought in Ben Cherington, who has the track record in Boston of winning a World Series with a team that realistically had no business winning a World Series. And so I think that's kind of reset the patience factor for a lot of Pirates fans. Is it's like, oh cool, we know Neil Huntington's not here to trade Key Brian Hayes for basically nothing. And I mean, right now you look at what the Pirates are doing, we're going into the series 7-9. If we somehow like defeat your Tigers in a 2 out of 3 series, this team has a winning record, or like a 500 record right now or something like around that. You know, I don't know how to do math sometimes, but it's like, you look at the trajectory now of the NL Central specifically, and the Cubs are behind us in the standings right now. They're in last place. If that continues, the Cubs are trending way down. And then you look at the other three teams, the Reds, the Cardinals, and the Brewers. The Cardinals are really the only one that trended a little upward this offseason. So you really don't know what's going to happen in the NL Central over the next couple of years. Meanwhile, the Pittsburgh Pirates, a lot of their prospects that we'll probably talk about in a little bit, are slated to come up in 2023. So it's like, okay, you kind of put the trajectories together and it's like, well, if the Pirates are good in 2023 and the Cubs aren't, the Cardinals get older and the Brewers maybe lose some people and the Reds maybe lose some people, the Pirates could be division favorites in 2 years. So I think a lot of people are just being a little patient. They also know we have the number one pick. I don't want to get into that conversation because I can't tell you who I want Jack Leiter's, Jack Leiter and Kumar Rocker are absolutely ridiculous. I'll take either of them. I just hope we don't take the wrong one, if that makes sense. But I think people are pretty patient. I mean, they're still mad that we've only had four winning seasons since 1992, but it's the Pittsburgh Pirates, I think, is kind of the joke now. So the patience is there for people that actually want to be patient.
How much faith do you have in ownership right now? Because I feel like that's the big kind of point of contention with this organization at this point, is there has not been, especially in recent history, a whole lot of faith in Nutting. Do you believe that when the moment comes where they got to make some moves, do you think that he'll be able to spend the money and maybe, you know, fight in that upper tier, that upper weight class with some of the big spenders? Because Pittsburgh is a big market, and you feel like I feel like even when they were really rolling, they never quite spent the money to get some of those big guns that probably could have gotten them over the top.
And I mean, it's very possible that he does, but it also, how does he want to do it with Ben Cherington? We haven't seen that yet. So whenever that does happen, that'll be a big deal, because it'll be like, okay, does he instill enough money for Cherington to say, let me go get this extra pitcher I need, or let me go get this right fielder, or whatever you need at that point in time? Track record says no, but we also haven't seen him with this new group in Derek Shelton and Ben Cherington. And it seems that he's giving Ben Cherington a lot of leeway in a lot of the things that he's doing, because if Neil Huntington would have tried to trade Joe Musgrove, Jameson Taillon, and Josh Bell in the same offseason, he probably would have laughed at him. And now he's like, okay, well, the pandemic kind of money struck us a little bit. If we can go and get some really good prospects, and you're telling me 3 years from now when money's good again, like we'll be good again, that's where I think his thought process will go, but it's only a time will tell thing.
In general, were you happy with the returns for Taillon and Bell and Musgrove, or were you disappointed?
For Bell, yes. I mean, for all of them, yes, but the most I still think was from San Diego. I mean, you got Hudson Head, who's one of the better outfielding prospects in all baseball. And then, I mean, you also pick up Andy Rodriguez, who's another good player from the Mets organization. But I really think the best one was still the Taillon trade, arguably, just because Miguel Yajure is going to come up eventually. There's no way he doesn't. He played last year on the roster for New York. He looked pretty okay. He looked good in spring training. Our pitching staff isn't that great. I mean, we've given up the most first run innings in baseball this year, and somehow we're still 7-9. Don't ask me how that happens. But I mean, at some point you're going to have to say, okay, Yajure is coming up, right? Then you have Kanan Smith, who's an outfielding prospect, who's going to absolutely rake in PNC if he ever comes up. I mean, he's a left-handed power hitter in PNC Park. I mean, like, that's like a match made in heaven. And then you have other guys too that you picked up in those trades, like Will Crow could make an immediate impact from the Josh Bell trade. Eddie Yean has shot up boards for like the last year or so, and he's only 19. So I also said this on my pod once, and people were like, yeah, a little bit, maybe. I said the return for Taillon and Musgrove was better than the return we got for Gerrit Cole. Some people were kind of like iffy about that. Some people were like, yeah, sure. Like Joe Musgrove then turned into all this stuff. But I still think that the trades were really good. We needed to finally go in this direction of saying, okay, we're just rebuilding. We're not going to win 78 games and then be like, oh, maybe we'll pick up another piece and win 85 next year and then win 82 the next year. Like, we're not in that purgatory anymore. It's like, okay, we're probably winning 65 games at max.
Right. And I mean, the last place you want to be, the one place you can't afford to be as a baseball organization, is in the middle. I mean, you either got to be all in trying to win, or you need to be essentially tanking for prospects. And if you look at the roster right now, if you had to guess just in general, how many guys do you feel like are future pieces? How many guys do you think could be on this roster the next time the Pirates are in the playoffs?
At minimum three, and that would be Reynolds, or probably Reynolds, Hayes, and Keller. Even though Keller has just looked terrible again this year, I think he's going to fix it eventually. The kid's only 25. He has time to figure it out. And I mean, albeit he's been in the league for 3 years, but he still has time to figure it out. But I mean, if you're looking at bullpen arms too, like our Rule 5 pick, Luis Oviedo, has looked really good. Hometown kid David Bednar from the Padres trade has looked really solid as well. So those guys I think will be in there as well. Starting pitching wise, though, I don't think any of these pitchers are going to be there when they start contending, except maybe Stephen Brault and Keller. I think that's it. And JT Brubaker's looked pretty good too. So possibly him, but you also have to take in the small sample size. Colin Moran's another interesting name. They handed the keys over to him at first base this year, saying, okay, well, we traded Josh Bell. You're going to play first base now. Has always played third base primarily, but they handed the keys to him. I think he could. Outside of that, though, I don't see anybody else on the – like, Polanco is going to be gone after this year. Fowler and Dustin Fowler and Anthony Alford have not looked great in center field. Newman and Frazier are trade pieces at some point, especially Adam Frazier with the way he's hitting the baseball right now. And then I'd say Jacob Stallings still, just because of his consistency. He'll probably still be there as like a 34, 35-year-old catcher, but at that point you'll also probably be looking at Andy Rodriguez or another guy in the system to play catcher. So I'd say probably at least three, but no more than like six or seven.
I mean, that's pretty good, I feel like, considering where they're at in their rebuild right now. I mean, you look at the Tigers, there's not any person on the offense, pitching, sure, but, you know, offensively that I can look at and definitively say, yeah, I think that guy's going to be here, you know, 4 or 5 years down the road. You brought up the idea of prospects being called up in 2023. That's kind of their expected time of arrival. Is that the year in which, like, is that kind of the deadline that a lot of the fan base has set for themselves, that, yeah, if we're not seeing traction, if we're not moving forward by 2023, people are going to start panicking?
I think yes, just because they kind of understand that this team just isn't good this year. They understand that. And they understand even next year, like, Kumar Rocker or Jack Leiter can't pitch next year. Like, it's just not going to happen. So, albeit you're going to have the number one pick, but that number one pick's not going to play until probably 2023, 2024 at the earliest, depending on who they pick and how they develop. But I think that's where it is most rebuilds have been in Pittsburgh now have been set on that 3-year track because of the 2013 through 2015 years, where they made the wild card game and won 1 of 3 and almost, to me, should have beat St. Louis in the NLDS. But I don't like talking about that too much because, you know, got to love Michael Wacha sending you out of the playoffs. But either way, I think 2023 is the year, just because Charrington, to me, last year, 2020, was not a full year for him to actually evaluate players. This is his first full year where he can definitively say, I can evaluate Key Brian Hayes, Phillip Evans, even if you get Jared Oliva called up, Mitch Keller, guys like that, I can fully evaluate them now. You couldn't do that in 60 games where you only won 19 games last year. So usually for me, and this is where I think most people are too, 2 years should give you enough time to figure out who's here, who's not, while your prospects are there. So that's why I think 2023, I'm not saying necessarily the Pirates should be contending for a World Series in 2023, but they should definitely be in the mix of the NL Central by that time. Yeah. And if they're not, I think a lot of Pirates fans are going to get very impatient.
Yeah, I think that's got to be the show me year. You know, and you're not asking you to go out and win the World Series, not asking you to splurge and spend $300 million on a starting pitcher, but there comes a point where you got to, the team they have now has to be different than the team they're going to have in 2023 for people's patience to avoid, you know, having it run out. Now, it wasn't that long ago when Pittsburgh, for a minute there, was viewed as kind of a safe haven for revitalizing pitchers' careers. You know, Ray Searidge, the pitching doctor who was there for a long time, Clint Hurdle, and the job he did with AJ Burnett and the job he did with Francisco Liriano and Melanson and Grilly. I mean, there was a solid stretch of time where it seemed like if you were a veteran and you came to Pittsburgh, you had the ability to revive your career. And then they had that core of really young, good arms. You had Cole and you had Glass now. And for a little bit there, you had Musgrove. Obviously, he came up through the Astros system. What do you think it is that has led to these potentially generational arms? I mean, Cole is generational. Glasnow is starting to look like it. And Musgrove looks really good in San Diego. What do you think led to them kind of just plateauing in Pittsburgh? Because it seemed like Cole, all these guys, Glasnow and Cole especially, kind of took that next step after leaving Pittsburgh. Is it the pitching philosophy? Was it the pitching coach? What do you think happened?
So a lot of it too was, like, especially if you go on the trajectory of talking about Glasnow, the team just wasn't very good. So it's very hard when you have a young pitcher like him to say, hey, go out there and do really well, but your offense is only going to give you 2 runs. So, like, and that's kind of been the issue with Mitch Keller now, is almost every start that he has, except the one win he has against Chicago this year, he's been behind almost every single time he steps on the mound. And it's so hard when you're so young to build up confidence like that, because you immediately think, if I give up another run, I'm either one, getting pulled, two, this loss is going to be pinned on me, or three, what am I doing about it? And like, it's not like the Pirates over the last 4 years have had a offense that spat top 10 in baseball. Like, yeah, you had Josh Bell, you had Andrew McCutchen at one point still, but that was like that kind of like moving down. You had Starling Marte and Corey Dickerson, but outside of that, there wasn't like a good supporting cast of an offense for pitchers. So I wouldn't pin it a lot on coaching. I think a lot of it is, though, too, especially with Glasnow, I think they rushed him too quickly. I do think that. I think he should have waited another year before he got called up. I said the same thing about Mitch Keller, and we see where we're at with that situation right now. So the call-ups are a little weird, but now the Pirates do have like a new farm director, so I feel like that'll get fixed over time. And I mean, the next guy to come up after Keller is going to be Quinn Priester. It's going to be very interesting to see when he does it, because he only played one spring training game and did not look good, but albeit it was one game. Let him sit in AAA, let him build his craft up and bring him up next year. That's what I've said about Quinn Priester. Do not run. Like, I understand rebuilds are a thing and people are very impatient, but if you want a rebuild to work, you have to be patient with it. And I think the patience factor with Glasnow especially was not there, because he was expected to be the next Gerrit Cole right after they traded Gerrit Cole. That's a lot to put on a kid. That's a lot to put on somebody. So I would say it's more of the call-ups were wrong, but I think now with the new regime and everything, I think they're going to be a little more patient with it.
Yeah, and that was going to be my next question is now that, because, yeah, I don't know who they're going to take. I mean, I think both of them are going to be great, but pending something crazy, it's going to be between Leiter and Kumar Rocker for that number one pick. Do you have more faith now than you did, say, 2-3 years ago in the player development, especially in regards to their development in young pitchers?
I would say yes, but I also still haven't really seen it, just because we haven't seen our first round pick, Nick Gonzalez, play at all yet because of no minor leagues in 2020. So it'll be interesting to see that. But they're also working with a much better farm system this time than we have had in past years. Like, Neil Huntington was notorious for not having a good farm system whatsoever. That's a big reason why in that 2013 through 2015 window, they couldn't take the next step, because they didn't really have anybody to bring up to do it. So they had to trade for Marlon Byrd and AJ Burnett and Liriano, who helped. Like, don't get me wrong, but you didn't exactly have that arm in the system that could come up and be like the fifth guy, kind of like San Diego has right now in Chris Paddock and Mackenzie Gore. Mm-hmm. So I trust it a lot more, just because I think Charrington kind of understands the farm system a little more now. And he also, if you go look at the Pirates' top 30 prospects, for whatever reason, for you Tigers fans, if you feel the need to do it, 16 of the top 30 prospects in our system are from Ben Charrington trades.
Wow.
So wow. He has his guys there. So he knows what he has for the most part. At least half of the players in our system, he knows what he has. And he also already inherited a Quinn Priester, Key Brian Hayes, Leover Paguero, Brennan Malone, Carmen Majinski, guys like that. He already inherited that, but he knows what he has elsewhere now, and other guys like the guys I mentioned earlier, like a Tanaj Thomas, like a Kenan Smith, like all those guys, like Will Crow. So having the fact that you already have over half of your farm system, then you're adding a Jack Leiter or Kumar Rocker, that's going to be 17 out of your top 30 prospects once Hayes gets off that book after this year that are your guys. So you're going to see how he really enjoys it. Like, I think Charrington enjoys seeing building a farm system. I really do. And it's nice to have that for a team that's rebuilding.
Absolutely. And I mean, to have faith in the current regime it's a wonderful thing. I mean, it's been a while since we felt that in Detroit, and that's where I'll transition here. Obviously, 3-game set coming up at Comerica. You know, I like asking people outside of Detroit this question, because when you're in the thick of things, sometimes you have a tendency to kind of you know, wallow in your own pity sometimes. But I'm just wondering, you know, as somebody who's a fan of a team in the opposite league, as someone who's a fan of a team that's rebuilding, what's just kind of been, and maybe the limited action you've seen, your assessment of where the Tigers are at right now in their rebuild?
Well, so as far as I know, you have some pieces. Like, I mean, we've seen Akil Badu, like, absolutely just rocket up everything right now. I don't know what in the world, like, happened there. But as far as things go with, I mean, I know you have Carson Fulmer. I've heard he's a pretty solid pitcher. You basically yanked Jose Urena away from the Miami Marlins, which I thought was a fabulous pickup for you guys. But I mean, I don't know a ton about your farm system. Like, if I remember, like, I'll actually look right now. But like, if I look at the names, I would remember them. But I mean, I could see that they're at least trying to add things to like the method of what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not just saying we're just bad. Like, they're trying to actually like add pieces to something they think can eventually be good. Like, yeah, now that I look, like Spencer Torkelson, probably going to be one of the best third basemen in the American League in a couple years, in my opinion, just the way he plays. Another guy, Riley Green, for like any Pirates fans listening as well. Another good guy. I mean, like, you also have another Cabrera coming up soon, and Daniel Cabrera. Yeah. I think you have a lot of pieces that are going to be working together. And also, Jonathan Scope is one of my favorite players in Major League Baseball. I will say that. So I am happy to see him play. I think a lot of your rebuild, though, will hinge on when Miguel Cabrera's contract is gone. And I think that's where a lot of that pulls into. Yeah. I think it's the same thing in Baltimore with Chris Davis. Like, whenever both of those contracts stop and you can add even more pieces, I think that's where it's going to like really take that next charge forward.
I think you're right. The one difference between those two is Baltimore is not as big a market as Detroit is. Like, they are kind of using the Miguel Cabrera contract, bad contract, but that contract as a bit of a crutch to say, well, this is why we're not spending. When in reality, they're in the bottom third in terms of payroll, which when Dombrowski was here is a place where they never were. Look, there's pieces. There's a lot of pitching. Daniel Cabrera, I think their last draft where they got Cabrera from LSU and obviously Torkelson number one overall, and they got Dylan Dingler, the catcher out of Ohio State. That was a very good draft. That was the best draft they've had possibly since the 80s. I feel like a lot of it depends on how these guys develop. But the problem I have with our current rebuild, and the problem I feel like you guys don't have, is at least not yet. I mean, we'll see how guys, you know, come up through the system, but it's hitting with those little guys, like the adding the depth to your farm system the way you have with the Bell trades. And sometimes, you're not going to trade Josh Bell. No one's going to give you a top 10 prospect. You're not going to get a Casey Mize. You're not going to get a Riley Green for somebody like that. But it's hoarding the guys who you might hit with. And the Tigers have done a fine job getting Mize, who was number one overall. Torque was number one overall. Green was top five. Matt Manning was top 10. The one outlier is Tarek Skubal, I believe, was a ninth round pick, and he's still unproven. It's just, there's a lot of frustration regarding hitting on those smaller tier guys. It's one of the most top heavy, best farm systems in baseball, but it's not one of the deepest farm systems in baseball. And just regarding the kind of this series, in general, what do you feel like is the expectation at this point? Because both these teams are in weird spots. You're at a point where you're aware of the situation, but we want to see them be successful. We want to see them win. Is the expectation for this set coming up? You're playing against a team that's lost four in a row, just got swept at the Oco Coliseum by the A's. Is this a series you look at and you're like, you know what, this should be a win two out of three? Or is it, hey, if you get out of there with one, it's all right?
Well, I mean, it's 7-9 right now with the standings wise. Again, let me emphasize to everyone, it is early, but if the Pirates go in and sweep, they're 10-9. And when you look at who they play after this series in Minnesota, obviously me and you won't be able to lie to each other and say that the Pirates will probably beat the Minnesota Twins. But I've also said this over the last week and a half, that the Pirates have beat the Brewers in a series, who are not a joke. They split a series against the San Diego Padres, who are clearly not a joke, and again, without Tatis, but still, and beat the Cubs. I think if we started 1-6, so that means we've won six out of our last nine games, if I can do my math correctly. So, I mean, obviously, I think the expectation would be go in and at least get one or two wins. out of this series. You don't necessarily have to, but as far as how Pittsburgh fans feel right now, they're like, well, we have a better record than the New York Yankees. So are we actually not as bad as people said we were? And I mean, you also look at it again from a standing standpoint. The Cincinnati Reds play the Arizona Diamondbacks this week. The Diamondbacks aren't exactly a joke either. They're not that great either. But I mean, if Cincinnati drops two there and we pick up two here, Cincinnati has 8 losses. We have 10. We're right there with them. So like, that's what I like about it, though, is they need to instill a competitiveness in like these young players. That's what I think. Like, you can lose as many games as you want. As long, the only two games the Pirates have had, or three games the Pirates have had this year that I said they should not have won, were the two games against Cincinnati when they beat us like 14-1 and 13 to whatever it was, this past Saturday against Milwaukee, and it's actually 4, and the Saturday game on opening weekend against Chicago. Every other game, if you look at it, we've technically been in those games. So I think the expectation would be at least get one, but two would be nice.
No, it makes a lot of sense. And the Tigers, you know, pitching, they're not going to be pitching Boyd, who just pitched yesterday, who's been their best starter. You got Spencer Turnbull coming back from COVID related stuff. So I don't think he's going to give them a ton of innings. And then your Urania's and Fulmer are kind of mysteries at this point. And I agree with you, by the way, about that, like instilling that competitiveness, because it's one of the arguments I've made about the Tigers is I think you can lose games and maintain a winning culture. And I think that a lot of these guys that the Pirates have, that's a very young team, don't know how to win at the major league level yet. So you got to start, you got to build from the ground up and be like, hey, look, if we just try to see if we can get win one tomorrow, and let's see if we can win two, and then let's see if we can get on a winning streak. Yeah. So I agree with you completely about just the idea of just kind of instilling the idea of belief, really, of the idea of that you can win every day, depending on, you know, how well you play. Last question, they're 7-9 right now. At the end of the 2021 season, where do you see the Pirates stacking up? Is this still a team that's going to get probably a top five pick?
65-70 wins. I think at some point they are going to have that drop off where they lose like 6 in a row again, like they did start the year, but they just won't come back from it like they have already. Yeah. And I already said this too. I mean, they have 65 runs to their credit so far through their first 16 games. Yeah. They've given up 81, but if you take those Reds games away, they have a positive run differential. Like in some light of it, if you only gave up like half of those runs. Mm-hmm. But I mean, for me, the fact that people said that this team was going to lose 100 games, when you have guys like Aki Brian Hayes, who's an NL Rookie of the Year candidate, Adam Frazier is a 300 hitter on good weeks. Brian Reynolds before last year was a 300 hitter at every level of baseball he ever played in before last year. Mm-hmm. Colin Moran's no joke at first base right now. He's hitting the baseball really well. And then, I mean, your bullpen at one point this year, like this past week, I think they had 11 consecutive scoreless innings. Mm-hmm. Like it's not like this team is a joke. Like now if they lost 100 games, I'm not saying I would be surprised. I just don't think they will. I think the minimum amount of games they win is 65. The maximum, and this is like super best case scenario, is 75. Yeah. If this team wins 75 games, you might be talking about them making moves this offseason to win 80 to 82 games the following year. And in 2023, you really could be talking about a lot more than just the division. But that's like super best case scenario. Right. Like I'm saying, like 75 wins would be like, whoa, the Pirates won 75 games. And I mean, that the way the division's going, that might not even be last in the NL Central, the way the division's going. And I mean, it just depends. I still put them in the 65-70 range.
Yeah, that's probably about right. I mean, I think they've been a nice, you know, they've surprised me a little bit so far. I think, you know, I don't think it'll be as much of a bloodbath as people said preseason, because that division, like you brought up, is not that strong. I mean, I think there's teams obviously in there capable of making the playoffs, but only the Cardinals, I would say, are capable of maybe winning a playoff series. But a lot of baseball left. Ethan, I appreciate you joining us today. Where can we find you on social media?
Of course, you can find me at Locked On Pirates. You can also find me at MVP_Ethan. You'll see me probably tweeting about the Steelers drafting an offensive tackle next week in the NFL draft. You know, just a random thing. Everybody in Pittsburgh wants a running back round one. I keep saying we don't need one. But you'll probably see me just tweeting a bunch of antics, like Colin Moran smiling now. I have this meme where it's from, what's it called? What was that show? 13 Reasons Why, where the main girl says that damn smile, all it ever followed was trouble, and it's just Colin Moran smiling. So, yeah, I mean, you'll see all of my random tweets about the Pittsburgh Pirates. I mean, I think I had one blow up the other day that was like the not last place Pirates, and everybody loved it for like no reason. But that's where you can find me, at Locked On Pirates or at MVP underscore Ethan. I'm easy to find.
All right. Well, we appreciate it. And we appreciate all of you listening. That will do it for today's show. You can follow me on Twitter at Castellani2014. That's at Castellani2014. You can follow this show on Twitter at Locked On Tigers. While you're at it, go to Apple Podcasts, go to iTunes, leave a written positive 5-star review of this program. It would be much, much appreciated. I will be right back here tomorrow recapping the first game of the series against the Pittsburgh Pirates. Thank you again to Ethan for joining us. We'll see you later. Have a great rest of your day, and go Tigers.